Sarah, I started a Substack last spring, just kind of as an experiment, and it turns out I love it. I'm treating it kind of like an old school blog, writing about things that are happening in my life.
Megan, I've loved following your stuff on Substack, and I actually just really like Substack in general.
You know, we've both been a lot less active on Instagram lately, and I'm finding that Substack scratches that itch to connect and create without all the busyness of a typical social media feed. So I would love it if Mom Hour listeners wanted to look me up there. I'm at meganfrancis.substack.com, and that's Megan with two A's, meganfrancis.substack.com. Hi, I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with eight kids between us, and we're the hosts of The Mom Hour.
On this show, we're joined by a team of unique mom voices from across the country and in different stages of motherhood to bring you tips, ideas, and encouragement, and to help you feel a little less alone.
We all know that motherhood is a lot easier when real moms share honest truths and remind each other that it's all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to The Mom Hour. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 462 of The Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis here with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan. How are you?
Good. Are you ready for even more listener questions?
I am. I always love these episodes. Yeah, we're in week two of listener questions.
You don't have to listen to them in order, though. You can listen to this one first, and then you can go back because they have nothing to do with each other. It is a grab bag.
Fresh batch.
Fresh batch. Grab bag conversations, things that listeners have sent us that they want us to tackle. And sometimes they're very specific questions, like, help me out with this dilemma. And I feel like the last one, there were a lot more, this is an interesting parenting topic, and go.
Yeah, yeah, which is fun for us, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. It's all really fun for us. We're here to talk at you on topics of your choosing, friends. Our first question comes from Joy. I think we have actually answered a question from Joy in a past listener question, but she just sent a couple of really good ones. So Joy, we're back for you again. I'll read what she wrote. She says, it seems like there are different phases or milestones kids hit where you have to adjust your parenting style or how you spend your parenting time. Can you share what those were for your kids and about what age your kids were when it occurred? For example, I've heard parents say when their kids hit fifth grade, school got harder and they got more homework, that kind of thing. This is such a big question, Megan, but it is fun to think about milestones and phases of parenting.
Yeah, I agree. And I honestly found myself, like, the two that I'm going to talk about are more recent, because when I started to think back, like, way, way back when my kids were really little, it was kind of hard to remember, honestly, because there was changing happening all the time. And sometimes one kid changes in one direction while a different kid is changing in a different direction. So it's not like they're always, they're not all always moving forward in the same way at the same time, which also kind of complicates it.
I agree. And I don't know if you'll agree with this, but in my experience, I almost don't realize we've gone through a phase shift or a milestone shift until I look back. It's like often
pretty,
like,
far back.
Yeah. You're like, oh, right. Like, this is my life now. So yeah, it's a great question. It's very broad. So we each just picked like a couple, phases or milestones to share, and I'll jump in. I remember a really distinct shift from what I will call physical parenting to administrative parenting around the time my youngest slept all night, which is the funny thing about that is she was 2.5. So when this phase I'm talking about, I would have had a toddler, a preschooler, and like a young elementary schooler. That's just the way the my kids are spread. But around that time, I was finally getting more sleep at night. I distinctly remember I was able to get up before my kids in the morning and actually think about things like a plan for the day or my calendar or maybe read a book or a little bit of my own personal growth. That part was all really amazing and energizing. And it felt like I had really earned that shift. At the same time, the administrative details of running a household and a family, I feel like really ramped up in level of difficulty, you know, around the time we entered elementary school, and I had one in preschool. So I had two different schools to keep track of. And so everything I'm describing is coincidence, but coincidentally, I was doing a lot less nursing, up all night, sleep deprivation, chasing multiple toddlers. I still had one toddler, but like, So the physicality, the physical challenges of parenting really seemed to not go away completely, but really like ease up a little at the same time that the kind of mental and administrative and logistical challenges of parenting wrapped up. And so for me, that was having, yeah, beginning of elementary school down through like my last toddler.
Yeah, it is a real stage. Like there's a lot going on there. Yes. Yeah.
Another big one for us was when Brian and I realized that our kids were staying up so late that we could no longer reliably have time together after they went to bed. And I think it took us like too long to realize this. I've talked about this on the show, but I was still like clinging to this relief that I would get by like having a little glass of wine and watching a show with my husband. And it just kept getting later and later. And we were starting a show at like 8:45 at night. And that's not for us. I know some, everybody's bedtime is different, but we like to fall asleep between 9:30 and 10. So it just didn't make any sense anymore. And so that was a big shift in how we spent our evenings as a family. I honestly feel like we're still getting used to like, oh, we are no longer the people who put our kids to bed and then we have a whole evening in front of us. Like that is yeah. not our life anymore. And I'm trying to think of like in terms of when that happened, I'm going to say when the oldest was maybe like starting teen years. So let's just arbitrarily say 9, 11, 13, like those ages where, you know, like we just were still clinging to it, even though the 13-year-old hadn't been going to bed at 8 o'clock for quite a while. But, you know, we could still send the kids back to the bedrooms. And now it's just like, no, I want to go to bed before my kids.
Yeah, that's a big one. And I think hearing you talk about both of these actually, occurs to me that so many of these like bigger kid shifts were happening while I was also in the middle of a divorce,
Yes.
which really throws everything off. Mm-hmm. Cause then is it like the kids changed or I changed and the situation changed, which yep. is it? It's all yep. of them. I do remember starting to like, because I separated when Jacob would have been just having turned 18. Mm-hmm. Yes, he was just turning 18. And so there had been a couple of years with teenagers in the house. But at that point, there was also a bunch of smaller kids still. Yeah. So I think what we had started doing is like going into our room to watch a show. Mm-hmm. And basically it was like the little kids got put to bed and the bigger kids put themselves to bed. But either way, it wasn't our,
you weren't it on wasn't duty. Yeah.
our problem. But we were younger and staying up a lot later. So it might be like the tail end of the night. There wasn't going to be like we were going to bed at 8 to watch a movie and there were still kids just wandering around the house for the next 4 hours. Like that wasn't really happening. Fast forward to now remarried with two teenagers in the house and we go to bed hours before they go to sleep hours before. So lots of times we just don't even, we might send them up to their rooms and watch a show. It's like we're sending them away. They yeah. send themselves to their yeah. rooms. Right. And we might watch a show, but a lot of the time we're like, no, that it's, like this ship sailed.
Yeah.
The night is too old now. Yeah. And I don't even, what's the point of starting a show? We already spent all the evening sitting around talking after dinner.
Yes.
With the kids, or we watched a show with the kids.
Yep.
And now all the showtime has been used up, or like one of us went and took a bath for an hour.
Yeah.
And so anyway, it's kind of interesting. And then thinking about that in the middle where I was single, man, I think I was just kind of always around and they were just kind of coming and going.
Yeah.
Cause I didn't have like a partner that I was trying to get quiet time with.
Yeah. And so, you had that the split schedule where yes. sometimes you had a whole bunch of kids in your house and sometimes you had zero.
None.
So you probably yep. went back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you? What are some that come to mind for you?
Well, one, this is not exactly logistical and I can't really even pin it to a specific age. It's more like just a shift in the parenting winds, if we'll, you know, if that makes sense. So, there was a point when my kids were really little, they followed me around.
Yeah.
All I was like a planet and they were satellites and all I had to do was be available. And so I think they call it benign neglect. So for many years I was just around.
Yep.
That doesn't mean I was actively paying attention to what they were doing or like on the floor playing with them. I was always working from home. Like there was a lot happening, but I was just around.
And you were a magnet. They would come to you.
And I was a magnet. Yeah. I didn't have to go find them. They came to me. if there was a boo-boo, if there was a need, if someone wanted something, if they just wanted to sit on my lap. Like there were just, I was like doing my thing and they were coming to me constantly. And at some point that shifted. Now, I actually think, you know, people talk about their younger kids getting the shaft parenting wise because they become lazy or they just become more relaxed or whatever, give up. I actually think I'm a way better mom to my youngest kids as teenagers than I was my oldest because I didn't see it happening with my oldest that I needed to go find them.
Yeah.
Because I still had little kids who were still coming to me all the time.
You were still a magnet.
I was still the magnet. So it didn't, I think it took me longer to catch on that some of my little metal, my iron fillings, let's say, had demagnetized and were like off floating in their own little orbit. And I mean, I'll say it's not like everybody looks back and has phases where they're like, oh, I could have done that a little bit better. Or I could have been more proactive. I could have seen that.
Yeah.
Sure. I absolutely could have, didn't figured it out.
Yeah.
But now I feel like, oh, well, because there's nobody coming to me, I'm always going to them.
Right.
Like I'm going and tracking down Clara and Owen and knocking on their bedroom doors and coming in to talk to them. Because if I don't, I might not know what's happening. I feel the, I notice the absence a little more. Now, I will say that after going through a stage like 13, 14, 15, where they really do kind of hide a little bit, they come back. Mm-hmm. I feel them gravitating back toward me again. It's just a little bit different than it was. So that's one. And I think that's a big, depending on the number of kids you have and the gaps and what else might be going on in your life. I think some parents really get their feelings hurt when that happens. I think you don't notice sometimes until suddenly you're like something worrisome is happening. I just think if you're really in a place where you're very overwhelmed by life or really busy, it can just kind of happen without really getting a lot of attention. And I think that's where we can get into trouble with our teenagers and our relationships with them. So just something to keep an eye out for.
I agree. I also think it's the kind of thing it's very hard to believe will happen to you. This is true of like, of a lot of parenting phases. You hear people talk about it and it's not that you're not trying to be in like a denier, but you just can't imagine. I'll use Violet as an example because she was like extra magnetic to me. And she was the youngest. So I had, I think, a higher tolerance for being like a magnet. And she just never left me alone. She didn't want to play by herself. The only time Violet ever went to her room was when she was really mad, which happened. She would throw big fits and she'd go slam her door. Well, then I had to go to her because she was like ripping stuff off the wall and stuff. So she was a magnet to me. And it was so strange. It's like, I didn't believe, even though I knew it, like I didn't believe that she would ever want to not be with me. And she's not even a teenager yet, but she's just a tween and just has her own. She likes to be in her room drawing or listening to music. It's just so weird when it happens because you don't think it's going to happen to you. And the other quick thing I'll say about that is, even if you are the type that reads all the books and knows all the developmental stages, I just think that age can really vary. You might have a 9 or 10-year-old who's really wanting to separate or isn't magneting to you, or you might be magneted till they're 14 or 15. And then all of a sudden it's a big rejection. So it just could happen at any time.
Yes, totally. Well, the other one that I have is also a more recent thing. So if you have little kids, this might not make a lot of sense to you yet, but it's coming. And I would say this is when my kids went from having problems I can solve to having problems I can't solve or that I can't really even get involved in. They get big people problems. They get adult problems and they're not mine anymore. And I have been learning to detach and let go sooner with each adult child.
Say more about that. Like
just
like sooner in the problem.
Sooner. Yeah. Like sooner in the age. The younger.
Okay. Got it.
Younger. I think I was a little overly involved in some of my oldest kids' situations as they were getting older. Cause I didn't know how not to be. Mm-hmm. And, sometimes boundary issues, sometimes my Enneagram 2-ness coming out. Like there's a lot of reasons for that. And it's almost like all at once, the oldest three are sort of just like out in the world figuring their stuff out more on their own than they used to be. And it's really a good place to be. But it took me a while to get there. Because you don't recognize it. Like the young adult stage is very strange. they're not fully formed adults yet, but they're also not kids. And it doesn't happen overnight. It happens very slowly, and it happens slightly different for each kid. So it's like you have to gauge every situation separately with this, like, what does this situation need? Not just what does this human being who is my child but no longer a child, what do they need? Because sometimes what they need is directly at odds with what you need.
Yeah.
And you can't give it all away.
Yep.
Forever.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
Yeah.
And it's a whole stage. Big people probs. Yeah.
Megan, the end of the school year and kickoff to summer is a busy time of the year for families, but we can all eat stress-free and hit our wellness goals with ready-to-eat meals from our sponsor, Factor.
Factor's delicious meals are never frozen and can be ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can pick from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular choices like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Plus, they have more than 60 add-ons like breakfast, lunch, snacks, and beverages to keep you fueled all day long.
So our team was comparing notes recently on our favorite Factor meals, and Katie loved the herb-crusted chicken with mashed cauliflower and toasted almond green beans. I loved that one too. And get this, so did her little boy, Charlie. She heated it up for lunch one day, and Charlie, who's three, ate almost all of the green beans. I mean, that's quite an endorsement, right?
I was going to say, what a parenting win. And I get it, Charlie. Those green beans are crazy good. And if you really want to treat yourself, they even have meals with filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Listeners, head to factormeals.com/momhour50 and use code MOMHOUR50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code MOMHOUR50 at factormeals.com/momhour50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Okay, Megan, like many of our listeners, I'm sure, I've been doing some spring cleaning in my closet lately, and it always feels so good to get rid of clothes I'm not wearing, things that don't fit or that aren't my style anymore. But you know what I realized? All of my Vionic shoes are always in the keep pile. They just tick all the boxes. They're cute, comfy, high quality. They last forever. And I love growing my Vionic collection, especially with the latest styles from their Vionic Vitals collection.
The Vionic Vitals collection offers daily wear styles designed for elegance, comfort, and versatility. We both love the Uptown Loafer, which collapses flat, so it's perfect for travel. The Chardonnay Heeled Sandal, which I know you love, Sarah. The Walk 23 Classic Sneaker, which our team member Katie gets compliments on all the time. And the Willa slip-on flat, one of my favorites, which comes in 12 colors for any outfit.
Yeah, I need to get the Willa slip-on flat. That's next on my list. Well, listeners, if you're ready to try the shoes we're always raving about, use code THEMOMHOUR15 at checkout for 15% off your entire order at vionicshoes.com when you log into your account. That's one-time use only. Vionic Shoes, wearable well-being for your feet. We are welcoming back Ritual as a sponsor today. Megan, we both try to make healthy choices, but you know, sometimes it's tricky to sort through fact and fiction when it comes to supplements and vitamins to figure out just what they're doing for us. That's why I'm glad Ritual keeps studying their products and sharing the results, especially as it relates to women, since women are the focus of all Ritual's products, including the Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin.
And the results are super reassuring. Just as an example, Ritual conducted a university-led clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin, and it was shown to increase vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin is made with high-quality and traceable key nutrients in clean, bioavailable forms with 9 key nutrients in 2 capsules per day. Plus, they are leading the industry when it comes to sustainability. They use lower carbon packaging and prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients. That kind of thoughtfulness really matters to me.
No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/themomhour. Start Ritual or add the Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/themomhour for 25% off.
All right. Well, this next one comes from Emily, and this is, again, more of like a big picture conversation starter. Emily says, my youngest is going to kindergarten next year, and I feel like I'm in a transition phase. I feel like I need some purpose outside of being a mom, and I've been thinking about going back to work in some capacity, but that feels scary as I'm currently a stay-at-home mom. I would love to hear you guys talk about transitions in motherhood and finding purpose in other areas of life as kids get older.
I mean, first of all, this is a really positive, I think. I feel so glad that we have the community that we do and that we live in the time that we do, because Megan, I feel like even 9 years ago when we started talking about working full-time, being a stay-at-home mom or a working mom, don't you feel like the narrative about that binary felt so much more fixed 9 years ago than it does now? Do you think that's just me?
I have no idea, because I feel like one of the reasons it doesn't feel so fixed to us anymore is because we've lived through parenting long enough to see that most of the time that moms go in and out.
Yeah.
That most of us, it's not a binary. So we've experienced it, but I don't know if it's still perceived that way or not. I really don't know.
And I don't want to take away from important conversations that are having about working motherhood. And that's never been like our sole focus on this podcast. But I seem to remember when I was a newer mom, the articles I would read and the advice columns and things seemed very much like stay at home or work full time. And there wasn't as much discussion of the in between. And so for Emily, I'm just glad we are in this community and in this time where she has the privilege. It is a privilege to look at this for herself. And I think like even in our Facebook group, there's some really interesting threads lately about people who are thinking of shifting their work, like working from home, taking on part-time work. So I guess all of that to say, want to like give Emily a high five for paying attention to the fact that her life is about to change, that might change how she wants to spend her time. And I would just like to give her permission to not need to figure it out immediately, because it won't be the last time. We just did that whole question about these shifts that happen in how we spend our parenting time, and this won't be the last one. So I don't know. I feel like it's like an invitation to the universe. Like what is next? Like, let's stay open and see what happens.
I also want to say that this might sound awfully post-COVID, post-pandemic of me, but I just want to say too, there are so many ways to find purpose outside of being a mom that have nothing to do with paid work. And obviously that's been a thing forever. But I think the first thing we think of is like, okay, I've been a stay-at-home mom. Now I'm ready to branch out, and the job's the thing. Right. And I think people are realizing a job is often not the thing. Uh-huh. a job can serve a very specific focus or purpose, I suppose, by putting money in your pocket or giving you professional outlets. And those are all great things, but it doesn't mean it's going to help you tap into like a purpose with a capital P, that higher, plane that we're trying to get to. I think sometimes we think jobs can do more than that they can do. Mm-hmm. So if what you want is time away from the kids and a little pocket change, that's fantastic. And a job doesn't have to be any more than that.
Yeah.
But what if you're looking for is like purpose, like a calling or something that really pulls you, it probably will take longer to find. It probably will be a little scarier, right? And like a little more murky. And it might not, unless you need it to be, it might not be paid work.
Yeah.
So like there's option A, B, C, D, and E. And F.
Yeah, I agree. I just can share personally that I definitely feel like I'm in a exploratory phase of what kind of work or non-work, what kind of like time filler is next for me. And I don't have any, like, there's nothing immediately on the horizon, but I have just felt like I have said this out loud to a few people, like there's probably a career 2.0 at some point for me, and I don't know what it is yet. And something I have been trying is literally just saying that in casual conversation. Like even people I don't know very well, like if I meet someone and they ask what I do and I like explain a little bit about the podcast or like what my career has been like, you know, the last 9 years. And by the way, the podcast is not going anywhere, but my personal time I think is going to open up gradually over the next few years. And I've just started like saying that out loud to people. Like, I think there's probably something I'm going to look into in the next few years, and I don't know what it is. And people, generally like that. So I wonder if that would feel comfortable to Emily, just like saying out loud, like, yeah, I'm thinking about going back to work, but I don't know in what field yet. And like, I don't know, you never know where conversations might lead. People, you know, like people who have different kinds of jobs and different kinds of interests. It's just, like I said, it's like you're letting the universe know, like you are open to ideas.
Yeah. I love that. I always think it's a good idea to put it out there because people don't know what you're thinking, right?
Right.
And even if you said it once to someone, that doesn't mean anybody else heard you or remembered. So it's like, yeah, we and have
you,
to be our
own. It doesn't mean you have to do it either. Like if right. if you let everybody know, like you're thinking of getting a part-time job and then you change your mind, that's fine. Like, you, yeah, I tend to keep things really like close under wraps. And then I wonder why.
Then like, feel
why
like you have to make a big ta-da.
Yes, kind of. Some of yes. that. And also like, oh, then it's so hard to explain. It's like, well, no, why don't you just say the thing out loud? You're not married to it. Like you're right. just it. So that might be, I don't know, maybe that fits Emily's style or doesn't. Maybe she's already doing that. But for me, it has felt like a little bit of a different approach. And I've liked seeing people's reaction when they're like, oh, what do you think you're going to do? I'm like, I don't right. know. Maybe I'll get back to writing more. Maybe I'll do something else. And it's like including the world, the universe in the fact that you're in this kind of liminal state.
Yeah. It's like being your own advocate and like making other people your co-conspirator.
Yeah.
In a way, bringing them in on the ride and on the journey. And people like that.
I agree.
I was going to say one other thing about this. Because I do think, and I'm someone who's gone through a lot of transitions as a mom. So like just from one kind of work to another, or from one, you know, kind of stage to another, or one personal situation to another. And I think sometimes there's this idea that it has to be vastly different from the last thing you were doing. Like maybe yeah. Emily, I'm picturing this like an 80s movie, and Emily right. has been like,
she's
in her sweats
dusting off the briefcase. With,
yes, exactly. And like putting on her pumps and her power suit. And like, now I've got to get out there and, you know, bring my resume. And like, she's pounding the pavement. Anyway, if you haven't watched a lot of 80s movies montages, you should probably just go do that. But what if, because motherhood is one part of the job of being a stay-at-home mom, mm-hmm. but another big part of the job often is the domestic work that goes along with running a household. And you and I have said many times over the years, those are not the same thing.
Correct.
So your kids leaving the house and going to school and being in someone else's, you know, care for X number of hours a day, that part is like out of your purview for a little while, but there's still a lot of other things happening. And maybe one of those is something that's a step that is a step to something else that you might yeah. really want to do. Maybe there's something you want to double down on that you really like, or that you've learned about yourself. It doesn't have to look like something totally new and different that you've never tried before. And it's totally foreign, unless you yeah. want it to. And if yeah. you want it to, great. But maybe there's just something that you've been doing already that you want to delve into a little deeper. And yeah. maybe that's where you're going to find some sense of turning that, like that other part of what you do into a bigger focus, as maybe that active hands-on mothering becomes a little bit less of a focus.
Yeah. That's a great point. Well, we have another work-related question. So this is a kind of a nice pairing. I'm going to give a little bit of like, I'll try to summarize Chelsea's work situation, and then I'll kind of read the crux of her question. But basically, she is a physician assistant who worked in a clinical setting with patients, with people and coworkers in person for over 8 years. And then a few months ago, switched to a completely different role in the same field where she works remotely from home and travels. So she's had a big shift from like essentially daily clinical setting office work to working from home remotely, except for when she travels. And the travel has some unpredictability. She described as being kind of stressful on the family. Like, she loves that she doesn't have to, like, you know, leave the house every day, loves the flexibility of working from home. But then there's these like pop-up travels that are challenging. And she's really missing actually having colleagues and, you know, like being in an office, and I didn't realize like how big a change that was going to be. So that's kind of the crux of it, like totally different working setup. And she's asking us, if you were in my shoes, at what point would you say, hey, I'm miserable and this isn't working out, and then pivot my old practice where I really enjoyed working before I took the risk? is hiring currently and would love to have me back. I'm scared to start working outside the home again with a more rigid work schedule and worried I'll get overwhelmed with keeping up with all the kid things and household chores. On the flip side, I would have my nights and weekends back because that's when this travel is popping up. No travel required outside of the commute. And I would also be able to better plan months in advance. So, I mean, Megan, I don't think we're going to be able to tell Chelsea what to do, but it is another really great prompt for like, how long do you stick with something that seems like maybe it's not working out, but also maybe it's so different that you're just not used to it yet? Because these are pretty two pretty different working environments. Yeah.
Well, you know, Sarah, it also depends. If you're me, you quit sooner rather than later, probably. I think the thing that really stuck out at me was the line where she said, I feel like I'm going nuts being home all the time. I miss contributing to something more meaningful. Mm. Like those two things don't feel fixable with time.
Like they're not going to change.
They're not going to change. It's not like, and I'll just full disclosure to the listeners. I just had a situation where I was in a work environment such a short time. I never got around to announcing to anyone that I had a new job. I'm not even sure if I talked about it on this show.
I think maybe you mentioned it in our writing. I think did our episode about writing.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not there anymore. And there were lots of reasons for that I won't go into, but the biggest one is that when I figured out what was really bothering me about the job and the organization, I realized they weren't going to change. It wasn't a temporary, like, oh, if I can just, you know, if I can just off, get someone else to do this stuff, outsource this part or delegate that, or if they would change my tasks in this direction, or if my home schedule eased up, if I did all of those things, it still wouldn't have changed two things that actually were a little bit similar to these two things that Chelsea is saying. In particular, the contributing to something meaningful. Like, I just was like, it's not going to be that. And so there's no point me scrambling to try to make this better than what it is. I could have done it for more. I mean, it wasn't like super miserable. I could have stuck it out, but I thought, well, why? Like, why would I do that? So now the difference here is that she'd be going into a situation where she'd be going from working inside the home, which has issues, but she's also scared to start working outside the home.
And it sounds like, and I'll just add to that. It sounds like the reason she made the switch was that working outside the home was taxing on the family unit, on keeping up with stuff around the house. So she kind of like, she knows what she would be going back to, and that had its own challenges. But I'm going to agree with you, Megan. I'm reading now like into the words that Chelsea chose. She said, I'm realizing how incredibly isolating it is working from home. And I will say that I actually, for me, it is not isolating. And that tells me that this is like, Chelsea's probably wired for that interpersonal, like, physicality of being and making a difference and touching patients. And I mean, she's a physician assistant. So there's like not a more hands-on, like helping people role. And so that just might be, she just might be wired different than me, but that's not the point. Like it's about finding what makes sense for her. And I'm going to agree with you that that's probably not something that's going to change.
Yeah. And I mean, I know people who are true extroverts. I can easily work from home and not miss people much at all. I think there's all kinds of remote work. And I think because you and I have run a business remotely for so long, we're good at it. And we know how to like keep in touch and keep those touch points. I think that there are definitely work, remote work environments that don't feel that way.
Yeah. And industries that don't lend themselves. So yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Yes. I know that I have people who are close to me who I won't name on here who never went back to work in an office after COVID and are like, oh, it turns out my job is dumb. And it was always dumb. I just didn't know it was dumb because I loved my work family. Oh, like they really see it that way. And now that they don't have that, it's like, well, this job is no good. You know? So I think if you're really wired for that, like you said, that in person and or the kind of work you're doing just lends itself to that, it just might never feel good.
Yeah. And to Chelsea's credit, it sounds like she has tried to like explore whether she could fill in that gap. Like she said, she's like making lunch dates with friends and like getting out of the house. And it just sounds like reading between the lines, it sounds like she also really loved the work she was doing.
Yes.
But it was taking a toll on the family schedule. And then yet so is this, because we didn't go into the detail, but basically like she has to travel a couple times a month to conferences, and they don't let her plan ahead. So she doesn't get a lot of notice about when she's going to travel. Honestly, Chelsea, that would be the deal killer for me. Like and if your kids are getting older, I can't remember how old her kids are, but not knowing whether you might be gone like Friday through Sunday, 2 weeks from now,
that would be very really impossible. Hard.
So if the scales are kind of even for me, that would be it would be another weight in favor of returning to the old job. I didn't think we were going to give her direct advice, but I think
I know, but here we are. Have an opinion. But here's the thing. Also, I totally agree with you, but much as Chelsea is working really hard right now to make this current position work, could she reverse engineer the old job and all the problems she was having with it, just like interfering in family life and, you know, keeping up with other things?
Yeah.
Is there a solution there?
Yeah. Like
it doesn't have to be going back to the exact same situation.
That's a great point.
It could be going back to that situation now with new eyes, new wisdom, new ability to change it.
And this is kind of the theme of what we've been talking about, but like ages and stages of kids change and needs change. I did go look at her original email. So her kids are 4 and 7 now. So they may also be coming into slightly more independence, slightly less sick days of like being home from preschool all the time. Like less of the intense need for childcare in addition to school and all of that. So that also might help with returning to the old model. But like you said, not having it be, it's not exactly the same as it was before.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of nuance to this conversation, and that with as much attention and care and creativity she's giving to making this new job work, or the job she's in work right now, I think she could put that same creativity into making the old job better, and it might end up being the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I love is I didn't hear in this that she was beating herself up at all for taking the risk. And I love that. So I think it's really like kind of going back to Emily's question, the one before, like, she tried something wasn't working. Mm-hmm. She tried it. It's not working. And I didn't pick up in her email that like one of her reasons for not going back is that she somehow felt like embarrassed or like, I made this bed, I got to sleep in it. So I love that for her, because it sounds like she truly is evaluating like what's best for her and the family. And that's a much more pure place to come from.
Yeah. Sarah, we're welcoming our sponsor, Element. That's spelled L-M-N-T, a zero sugar electrolyte drink that leans on current science about what our bodies really need in order to deliver the most effective hydration possible. You know, Sarah, Eric is really into keeping up with health research, and he's been insisting to me for years that we actually need more salt to stay hydrated. Turns out Element agrees, because they've developed their product based on a growing body of research that shows that for optimal health outcomes, we actually need to be taking in sodium levels at 2 to 3 times government recommendations. That's a big difference.
Yeah, it really is, Megan. And, you know, electrolyte deficiency or imbalances can cause headaches, cramps, fatigue, brain fog, and weakness. I know I can feel really rotten when I'm dehydrated. And also, I don't love the taste of plain water, so I'm not that great about drinking it. Element makes a huge difference in how much I'm enjoying my hydration and in how I feel, and it's super easy to fit it into my daily routine. My favorite flavor of Element is the grapefruit, but if that's not for you, we're going to get you set up with a variety pack so you can find your favorite Element flavor. Plus, Element has a no questions asked refund policy. You don't even have to send the product back to get your refund.
Yeah, you can receive a free Element sample pack containing 1 packet of 8 flavors. So you'll get 8 total packets free with any order when you purchase through our custom URL. That's drinkelement.com/momhour, DRINKLMNT/momhour. This offer is available exclusively through our partnership, and it's available for both new and returning customers. To get that offer, again, go to drinkelement.com/momhour.
Okay, Megan. Well, over here at the Mom Hour, we are big fans of our sponsor, Our Place. In fact, you, me, and our team member, Katie, were all comparing notes on our favorite product. Katie was telling us that even though she's packing up to move her family to a new house, she cannot put that mini perfect pot from our place into the boxes yet because she's using it like every night.
Well, as someone who also has a perfect pot, I got mine as part of their mini home cook duo set. I get it. It's nonstick, which is key, but it also has all these handy features like a steam release lid with a built-in strainer and this nice beechwood spoon that nests on the handle in this perfect little peg.
Okay, well, I didn't get this pot, but now I want it. That sounds so great. Our place's cookware is great to cook with, beautiful to look at, and healthier for us as well. All of our place's products are made without PFAS, also known as forever chemicals. In addition to their cookware and tableware, our place is also making waves with their Wonder Oven, the most stylish all-in-one air fryer and toaster oven. Again, free from the forever chemicals found in many of those air fryers.
Listeners, our place offers a 100-day trial with free shipping and returns, and we've got a great deal for you. Go to fromourplace.com and enter the code MOMHOUR at checkout to receive 10% off site-wide. That's fromourplace.com, code MOMHOUR.
Megan, our sponsor, Carnegie Hall Kids, is a free website for kids ages 5 to 12 to learn about music through fun games and quizzes. I'm really excited to tell everybody about their new Sights You Can Hear quiz. This is really cool. It's an online quiz you can do with your kids or they can do on their own, and it plays a piece of music and then you guess what visual image or scene it sounds like.
Our listeners may have heard the name Carnegie Hall because of their live performances, but they might not know about all the educational resources they also have for kids and families on their website.
Carnegie Hall Kids ignites imagination in children, offering activities that both encourage musical curiosity and develop knowledge of musical concepts. And did we mention free? If you haven't yet, you're definitely going to want to check out Carnegie Hall Kids' interactive musical explorers around the world map. It teaches kids different musical traditions like Vietnamese folk, cumbia from Colombia, bluegrass and jazz from the U.S., and more.
Start the musical journey early and go to kids.carnegiehall.org to check out fun, child-friendly games and quizzes. That's kids.carnegiehall.org.
Okay, our last question today comes from Dana, and she says it's a little bit more for Megan and might tie into the book she's writing. So Megan, you can plug your book.
Give
us a progress update. But this is about launching kids to college or not. Dana says, when and where I grew up, everyone went to college immediately after high school. Now it's much more likely that kids take a year off or more before university, and it's more accepted that college isn't for everyone. So at what age do you start talking to your kids about life after high school, and what expectations do you have after they graduate? Do they start paying rent if they don't move out? How long can they move back home as a safe place to land before they need to financially contribute? Or do they? I mean, that is like literally an enormous question, but I'm just going to listen because my oldest is 15.
Well, this is the sort of thing that I wish I could say I had hard and fast rules that I stuck to. I did not. I had what I thought my rule was going to be. And when I was like a young parent and my kids were really little, I was like, well, they're going to be expected to move out and like go to college right away or get a job right away. And if they stay at home, it can only be for this limited amount of time and they're going to pay me rent. And then life actually happened and it did not work that way out for literally any of the three adult kids. Now, there were some other things happening. They didn't all just live with me for years after high school. It wasn't like that, but they kind of came and went. And then there was a pandemic and I broke my own rules because I realized it was too rigid and not very realistic. So good on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good for
but
you.
What I didn't do is then come up with a new rule that made sense. I just kind of kept kicking the can down the road for a while. And there was a lot of reasons for that. I think if you're married and you and your spouse are on the same page, it's very different than if you're divorced and you know that if you don't hold a certain boundary, they'll maybe just go to the exes and that situation might not be any better. And like there ends up being, like I said, I don't know if it was earlier in this episode or maybe it was last week's episode, that there were some boundary things it took me a while to figure out.
Yeah.
With my older kids in particular. It might have been this episode. But anyway, I feel like now that I'm remarried, I have the perfect excuse because I can just blame Eric. But culturally, we live in a different, like, we now have more people in a house with less finished space than the last house I had lived in.
The structure has been reorganized.
It's reorganized. Yeah. And it's, there's not a flopping place for every kid who just feels like moving in with me and not leaving again now. And so they all know, they've been all put on alert, and they know that's the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've got Owen, who's about to graduate high school. He is 100% college tracked. I don't see him changing his mind about that. So the question becomes, is there a space available for the other kids if they need a temporary place?
Mm-hmm. So because that opens up, there's a room at the end.
Yeah, but there's also space. I mean, we've got another couple of rooms where, like, right now, if a kid wanted to move in with us, they could. And I think what would have to happen now is there would have to be a very specific start and end time,
uh-huh,
and some mutually agreeable rules in between. And Eric's just better at that. He just gets more put out by stuff than I do. And in a really good way. Like, he gets put out by the stuff I should get put out by and don't. Mm-hmm. It just builds up somewhere in my stress level until I lose my mind later.
Yeah.
Or I think there's like some tally board somewhere where I'm getting like nice mom points or something. It doesn't work that way. You know, expectations are very helpful with young adults, mm-hmm, because they need them just as much as we do. We all need, yeah, to know what's expected. And so I'm not answering this as someone who's like got this all figured out. I'm answering it as someone who absolutely lost my mind at a couple of my older, like, adult children, and then figured out that I had created an untenable situation for everyone because my boundaries were not secure, were not firm enough, and right, I wouldn't do it that way again. And now I've kind of have a situation where it's like the decks have been cleared, and I have a partner who will help me, yeah, set those boundaries, which is helpful too.
Well, I really appreciate all that honesty. And now it's not like you've just sent one kid off to college. Like, you have a track record. Like, you could kind of paint the whole picture for us, and it doesn't sound easy.
No, I've got a lot of experience now in like having to go, ooh, I said that. Did I mean it?
Right.
You know, what do I think now? Like, what fits? There's not a pandemic on anymore, turns, yeah, out. So, like, you know, a lot of the things that made it easy to kind of do the thing I really deep down wanted to do anyway, which was to not kick my kids out. Like, yeah, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it made it easy, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I really think I love the idea of interdependence. I feel like,
yes,
yeah, adult children who help out and, you know, go out on their own in the way that they can, but still help out. I think that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. In our situation, I was still kind of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, mm-hmm, of it was interdependent, it was much more like parent-kid still, and that needed to shift.
Yeah. Well, so, like I said, I really appreciate that honesty. I am realizing a couple things for myself, that conversations with my co-parent almost can't happen too early. Like, when Dana was asking, like, when do you start talking to the kids about this? And my first thought was like, well, Mike, I have an almost 16-year-old. I don't super feel obligated to go to him and be like, just so you know, as you start,
right,
thinking about after graduation, here's going to be like the rent situation, and here's how long you
can
live with us.
It won't mean anything to them anyway.
Exactly. So I, yeah, don't feel super obligated. Although, put a pin in that, because I want to circle back to another thing Dana asked about, showing them different options after high school. That I do, yeah, think I'm eager to start talking about with my kids. But back to the, like, can I live at home or not, and for how much? I feel like now would be a great time for me to start talking to my co-parent, even though we're a couple years away, because we have we're wired very differently when it comes to this kind of thing. And so you explained your trajectory through a divorce and a pandemic and a recoupling. I still think Brian and I are probably going to start out just with different mindsets about this. And I look forward to the talking about it. So this is inspiring me to start that conversation with my co-parent now, but not necessarily with my kids now. Cause like you said, it doesn't mean anything at this point.
And I think also for some kids, it can kind of create anxiety. Like, if, yeah, I had said to Owen, like, if you don't go to college, you're going to be paying rent, he couldn't be able to just hear that and blow it off and be like, oh, well, right, whatever, doesn't matter, I'm going to college. In his mind, then he's going to start wargaming. Like, well, what if I don't get into a college? Or,
yeah,
like, what does that mean? Do I have to start paying rent like May 19th? to 2024 because that's when I graduate. Like, it just creates, right? We just are dealing with the trajectory that actual kid is actually on and setting expectations around that, knowing that all along they've known any option is open to them.
Yes.
If they want to go into the military, I would support that. If they want to go work somewhere, I would support that. If they want to move in with another relative, like multiple kids of mine have lived with a sibling.
Yeah.
And I have housed multiple siblings' kids.
Yeah.
So there's like lots of way, because sometimes that's a nice way to not live at your parents' house anymore, but also not be out in the bigger world anymore. So there's like any option is on the table, and whatever option you want, kid of mine, let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about it. That's such a good, I find myself coming to my teenagers with that, like, come to me with what you envision and then let's talk about it. And I've used that for not college choice things, but other things. The other thing about not laying it out to the kid quite so early is it also locks you into maybe feeling like you have to stick to your own plan. I'm thinking of like, if you told a 6.5-year-old that they were going to get their first cell phone at 14, the summer between 7th and 8th grade or 8th and 9th grade, like, okay, that might be your plan. And you might, like, now might be a good time to talk to your co-parent about it. But like, I don't know, like, that's an awfully long way. Things could change. And like, do we want to be locked into that plan with the actual kid versus like kind of have it in the back of our mind? So
I was promised that my commemorative coin collection that was given to me at my birth would be sold and I would make $600.
Oh, that's exciting.
I never got my $600. And I was told that when I was 4 years old.
Oh my gosh, that's really funny.
Want my $600.
Somebody owes you
$600. Somebody owes me.
Really funny.
I'm sure my parents would see it very differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
They gave me $600 worth of value at some point in my life. True. But anyway, you're right. Kids don't forget the deal. And your life might change. It might not even be, it might be you move. And what if you decide to downsize and you can't house a kid anymore?
Yeah. And what if that kid has some struggles where you've said it's going to be really firm and they're out on their own? Well, now that kid has like had some mental health or some developmental issues in their teenage years. And it's like, okay, well, this 18-year-old is not ready to be. In fact, I don't even want them to try to live on their own yet. So lots could happen.
Really good point too, that it can't always apply equally to every kid. And that's why I think this is a good conversation to have individually based on what that kid wants. Cause otherwise it's irrelevant. Like, what do they need? Do they need to know what the deal would be in every situation or scenario so that they can choose? I don't think that's how kids' minds work. Like, they're not like, oh, okay, so the deal is I can either go to college or I can stay at home and work and I'll pay $150 a month rent. I guess I'm not going to go to college then because I can afford that rent. I mean, that's not how kids think. No. You know,
it's also not how these decisions get made. It's more of like a pulling gently at a thread that the parents are involved and the kid is also involved, but also things are constantly changing. And so, I think we're on the same page there. I'm hoping we can spend a couple minutes with another piece of Dana's question, which is when she was growing up, everyone went to college immediately. And she's saying now there's more choices. And I think this is a really valuable piece to unpack. We have a couple episodes about this, about like how we've talked to our kids about expectations in general and options in general. And you've shared really interesting things about like the preconceptions your kids came in with. And I had dinner with some girlfriends last night, one of whom has teenagers enrolled at a very like intense college prep private high school, and just was talking about like the intense pressure. Everyone's getting their, you know, acceptance letters right now. And that's in my same town and yet just in a different school community. And the reason I bring that up is not because one's bad and one's good. It's that whatever your bubble, whatever is normalized in your bubble. And in this case with my friend and I, we're literally in the same city, but we have different like expectations and norms around what's expected after high school because of just the different schools our kids go to. And that bubble can be really influential, I think, on teenagers. And I do think as parents, we have an opportunity to just gently show them that that is not the only way. Now, this could work totally both ways. If you were in a community where nobody went to college, your bubble expansion might look like showing your kids different careers and different academic options that include higher education, because maybe nobody in your family went to college, maybe in your town, it's like not the thing that the high school kids are doing. Or it could be like my friend who's trying to show her kid like literally not everyone needs to go to an elite college immediately after high school. But whatever the bubble looks like, I think that's something I hope to be able to continue to do, is just remind my kids how many different ways there are to be a fulfilled and purpose-driven human. And they just aren't all, it's just not one option. There's just so many different ways.
And you don't have to know right now. Yeah. You know, if I could go back and talk to myself as a young person, which, by the way, I've tried saying these things to my kids. It doesn't work because I wouldn't have listened either. But I would have just told myself to slow down. I went to college right after high school. Actually, I took a year off because I graduated so young. My dad wouldn't let me go because I was only 16 when I graduated. So I would have been 17 my freshman year. He was like, nope. But I did go when my friend, when they caught up with them. Right. I'm not saying it was the bad idea to go. It was certainly not an economically, it wasn't a wise investment. If you look at it as money in for job, Now, was it a wise investment in other ways? I got to live on my own. I got the experience of expanding my horizons, all of those things. So then, yes, it kind of balances that out. But I guess what I wish I had done at that time is just known that I could have also done that at 19, mm-hmm. or I could have done it at 22. Or I could have done it in a different way than I did it. It felt so much the only path I could see was the one that was the most obvious. And the only timing I could see was the most immediate. And it's just not that I try to tell my kids all the time, gosh, you have so much time. I wasn't figuring this part of my life out till I was 25. I wasn't figuring that out till I was 30. I haven't figured this part out yet. And I'm hoping that's becoming a bigger part of the nuance of these conversations.
I hope so too.
I'm not sure though. I think sometimes it's just now feeling like doors are being shut in different ways than they were.
Right. Or there's just more options to stress people out. It's kind of like moms and working. We were just talking about there's so many different ways to cobble together a career, but also sometimes that can make it and now you have to do all of them and choose the right one at every moment.
Or, let's be honest, there are a lot of kids who think they're going to be influencers for a living. Or my friend Missy and I were talking about her high school kids. So they're the same ages as mine, and how they were complaining because none of the summer jobs were things they were passionate about.
Oh, boy.
And Missy was like, no, you don't get to be passionate. scooping ice cream or serving burgers. That's not what this is. This is not a passion job. And these are down to earth kids. These aren't kids coming from families where they've been told you can do anything you want literally right now. And that can be being a YouTuber. I don't even think YouTuber is a thing anymore, really. But you know what I mean? I do think that there is a new element of kids thinking they're going to somehow magically skip over a lot of the work and get right to the part where they retire young after having an amazing,
passion-fueled
career they just invented. And you and I have both invented a passion-fueled career. We both know it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So that also that worries me a little bit about the generation, because it seems like, oh, this is so great. They're realizing there's options besides just leaving high school and going right to college. But what if that's because what they think is going to happen is Bitcoin?
That's a great point.
And I've heard some of my kids say things that I'm like, wait, what? So you're going to live in your car and then you're going to get rich? Yeah. Well, what's going to happen between the living in your car and getting rich? Where's the part where you do the thing?
Say more about that.
Let's talk about it. They'll figure it out eventually, but yeah.
I guess one more maybe nugget for Dana when she's asking about what do we tell our kids or when do we start talking about this with our kids? You mentioned telling stories about when you went to college. And I do think sometimes we want to protect our kids from some stories about when we were a flailing about young adult, or we think somehow our experience isn't relevant because the world is so different, or maybe we're in a different socioeconomic position or a different part of the country. But I do think that when your kids are way younger than making these decisions, when they're 9, 10, 11, mm-hmm. like before they've tuned you out, like telling stories about what life is like when you are working four jobs, waiting tables and commuting like an hour each way every day. Like that's part of, not that we need to overly romanticize it, but finding your way as a young adult is a part of everybody's own story. We've all done it for the most part. So I think normalizing telling those stories in family culture, I think is great.
Yeah, I so agree. And I feel like my answer to that part of the question is I'm never not talking about it.
Yeah.
Like it's not even like it started. I was like, oh, you know, the kids are 7 years old and now it's time to start talking about my life pre-college, during college, after college. It's just part of the conversation. And also we talk about other people in our families.
I was
going
to say that too. You've had like a really rich variety. So say more there.
Yes. Yeah. So like my siblings have done all kinds of different things from, you know, working in like in the, I don't even know how to call it. It's not exactly a trade, but like working in like the service, like utility, mm-hmm. like utility. Yeah. Cable, but same thing. So there's like one brother has done really, really well doing that. Another brother took a more like traditional approach to college, but still ended up working with my brother for the utility company. My sister ended up working in government. I never finished college and ended up creating my own career. Their dad did kind of the same thing. Eric is a self-employed painter and has done very well for himself. Like, I feel like there's so many stories out there. We just have to talk about people in our lives who are doing all kinds of different things and maybe open up our own perspectives a little bit too. Like be open to the fact that our experience might not be everybody's experience and that, like whatever our bias is, I'm sure I have one. Well, I know I have one that doesn't tell the whole story either.
Yeah. That was a good one. Do you want to give a book update? Are you writing about this in your book?
I will be. I don't want to give an update yet, except that there will be a book eventually. That's the only thing. I'm in this stage right now where like I'm kind of asking myself what have I got myself into. But
I think that's a very predictable developmental stage for authors. Yeah, if I understand things correctly.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for reminding me that I am developmentally normal as an author.
Yes, you are. Yeah. You are. All right, everyone. Well, thank you for listening. Thanks to all those wonderful questions that we got. It was like a lot of food for thought between last week and this week. We will be back with you all on Tuesday next week, and we will talk to you then.
Talk to you then.
Thanks for listening to The Mom Hour. Everything we talked about in today's episode is available at themomhour.com. And hey, while you're there, you can find more than 500 podcast episodes, plus articles, playlists, and resources about motherhood and parenting at every stage.
And if you like today's episode, we'd love it if you would take a minute to share the show with another mom in your life. You can also find us on Instagram at The Mom Hour, chatting and interacting with listeners between episodes.
Thanks for being here, friends. We'll talk to you soon. Megan, you know what I love about our partner, the Essential Calendar? I love the product so much, of course, but I also love that it comes from a small business founded by two moms.
Right, just like us. Listeners, if you're drowning in details right now, like summer camps, travel plans, end of school year mayhem, give yourself the gift of the Essential Calendar, a seasonal, at-a-glance, poster-sized calendar for your wall. Get 10% off your order at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour. That's 10% off at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour.
The Mom Hour is brought to you by partners like Chatbooks. Chatbooks makes it beyond easy to create beautiful photo books by importing your digital photos from anywhere. Instagram, Facebook, Google Photos, or directly from your phone. The books come in a variety of sizes with beautiful cover options and binding styles to choose from, and they start at just $15. Plus, we have a great deal just for our listeners. Use code THEMOMHOUR20 to save 20% off your purchase. Just download the Chatbooks app and use code THEMOMHOUR20 to save 20%.